For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome in to the On Texas Football live stream on a Tuesday night, and we are rolling. We are 10 practices into Longhorn spring practice, which means four more to go, then a spring game a week from this coming Saturday. Steve Sarkisian met the media today. CJ Vogel was there. We'll get some thoughts and hear from Sark here coming up. 10 practices in. We get an update on the injury to DJ Campbell. We'll talk about culture, as Sark has talked about the college basketball national champions and the teams that they had built, and how he admires them, wants to replicate some of that. There's a big name into the transfer portal, which opens up on Monday. So we have a lot to do, and we're going to have a lot of fun. It's the On Texas Football Tuesday live stream. CJ Vogel, Rod Babers. What's up, Rod B? How are you, man?
I'm doing good, brother. Doing good. Excited about talking about some spring football. We got a scrimmage already in the books. Still some news trickling out from the scrimmage. Even Sark gave us his thoughts about some of the standouts from the scrimmage. So I love Sark pressers, man. He always gives you a lot of detail and questions. That's something that, you know, God bless Charlie, you know, God bless Tom Herman. They didn't operate that way. Even Mac didn't operate that way. Mac would filibuster most of those media availabilities. Sark gives you detail. He's pretty upfront. So actually, I haven't missed a Sark presser yet. And I can't say that for Mac Brown or Charlie or Tom Herman, any of those guys. So I think Sark does a really good job of giving you pertinent information.
CJ, I want to get to that. I want to read this real quick, though, because we want you guys to become an OTF OG. Join us over at ontexasfootball.com. They're running running a special. It's $20 off an annual subscription to the site if you use the code OTFOG. That's OTFOG for $20 off. Instead of $60 a year, it's just $39.95. You get a monthly subscription for $5.95. For more insider news on the team and recruiting than you can find anywhere, make sure you check out ontexasfootball.com and become an OG. We also appreciate your questions and comments and super chats and all those things. We get going here on an hour of talking Texas football. We got Texas baseball down in San Marcos tonight, up 4-0 at last check. So we'll keep you posted on that ball game. And as we say, 10 practices in, 5 to go for the Longhorns on the way to the spring game on April the 20th. But pick that up, CJ, with, you know, Sark's willingness to share, you know, not everything, but certainly open about who he thinks is performing, who what he thinks they're lacking at. And I thought it was interesting today to hear him talk about, you know, Dan Hurley in UConn and Dawn Staley in South Carolina and the cultures they have built, and kind of how he's you know, trying to replicate that here at Texas, with culture meeting talent, becoming a machine that is really tough to beat.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it was a little peel behind the curtain, if you will, for Sarkisian talking about this week in scrimmage. Obviously, he mentioned what I thought was very interesting. He thought the defense had a really interesting, or at least a very strong start to the day, which certainly caught my attention there. But later on, I think we all heard that the offense was able to get the best of the defense in the red zone area to close out the scrimmage. That was, of course, what we reported on Texas Football Saturday afternoon after the scrimmage. Whenever the offense was nearing that red area, they found ways to succeed. And that's a new development, I would say, for this Texas offense, with Quinn Ewers and Sarkisian kind of manning the helm there. You didn't necessarily see that very consistently a year ago, but now that you're in year three for Quinn Ewers, and we've talked about kind of how comfortable and confident he has looked in the pocket and off the field this year, this is also that next step that you can expect to see coming in 2024. Sarkisian mentioned a number of guys this year, this afternoon, that kind of surprised him, or at least caught his attention. You know, we'll talk about Jalen Gilbo here in a minute. He mentioned him, Aaron Bryant, Sadir Mitchell, Colin Simmons. I mean, a lot of guys that we have heard about so far this spring, whether it be for good or for bad. We heard it from Steve Sarkisian today in his press conference. And again, I was very intrigued to see what he thought this group was good at, because early on, defense sounded like they had the better day. Then somehow it flipped the switch, and offense had the winning day at the end.
You know, Raj, we talked about this, and I know you have on your show and certainly here on the live streams, that, you know, the red zone offense was the Waterloo last year, right? I mean, it was the the fatal flaw for Texas, and a guy like Sark's going to obsess over that, stay up nights thinking about how to be better in the red zone, whether it was false sense of security from the year before with Bijan and Roshan, and just being, you know, those guys really good at the goal line, and it wasn't as good last year. But you look to the Oklahoma game, the Washington game, others, that was the issue. And to hear that in the first real intense scrimmage that red zone got the better of the defense, that's a positive development.
Yeah, and I would love to have known what the plays were that Sark dialed up in the red zone, because it was such a big issue for Texas last year, and it's such a big mystery. Sark, all throughout the season, was troubleshooting, trying to figure out exactly what the issue was, going with jumbo packages, going with different personnel groupings, sometimes, you know, thinking players, not plays, right? Thinking just A.D. Mitchell or J.T. Sanders is going to be my guy in the red zone. He tried a number of different things, and nothing really worked for him. So I know in the offseason, just a personality like Sark, he obsessed over it. He went down the rabbit hole. I'm sure he's got some beautiful mind type diagram somewhere on some dry erase board about exactly what he thought it was, his hypothesis as to what was the biggest issue and why they were 120th in touchdown percentage in the red zone, considering all the elite weapons they had that are going to be drafted into the NFL draft. So that's what I would like to know exactly, because I know it seems like, from what I heard, they were passes too in the red zone. There was some touch, you know, I mean, from the quarterback. So I'm sure he dialed something up. Sark, it definitely was in his bag over the course of the offseason working on red zone. So I'm not surprised that in the first scrimmage, we hear defense was winning the scrimmage early. But in late in the scrimmage, when Sark said, you know, basically they want to build the practices up to a crescendo. So they want the end of the practice to be like the fourth quarter, to be like overtime, to be intense. So I'm sure money time, red zone, they're probably doing their third down stuff late in practice. They're probably doing money down stuff late in practice, short yardage later on in practice, probably doing red zone stuff too later on, and probably in the scrimmages too, because those are the most important, you know, areas of football, right? Situational football. So I bet in those particular situations, Sark went into his bag of the very creative stuff that he probably came up with over the offseason to help them be more effective in the red zone. I would put money on that. Just from what I'm hearing and the way things worked out, that he was like, oh, no, this is the perfect time for me to try my new concept here in the red zone. I've been working on that. I got this from Mike McDaniel. I've been watching him in the NFL. I've been watching my man Shanahan. I got this when Sean McVay came down. I talked to him about this concept. Let me see if I can put it over. So I bet he was just dialing up very special plays in the red zone, and that's exactly what Longhorn fans want to hear. You're going to be able to move the ball in between the 20s. You got way too much talent. The question is, when the field shrinks and there's less field for defenses or defenders to have to defend, you know, the question now that you have to try to solve as a defensive coordinator in modern football is, how do you defend more space with fewer defenders? I got to interview a defensive coordinator. It's the first question I'm going to ask him. Is it a trick question? Is it a hypothetical thought experiment? I need to know how you think about football. That's the point of it. It'll give me a glimpse into how you believe, how you think about modern football. What's your philosophy? What's your ideology? And when you get in the red zone, the field does it for you. The circumstance does it for you. It allows you to defend more space with fewer defenders because there's less space to defend.
Yeah.
And why you can solve the question in the red zone. And that's why Texas, they had to figure that out. And I think Sark probably worked on it. That's why I'm not surprised to hear, man, in the red zone, Texas was great, actually, because I'm sure that's all Sark worked on pretty much in the offseason.
And you can trust we will see none of those in the spring game. None of those plays will be shown. None of that will be shown on April the 20th. That will not happen.
They'll be terrible in the red zone in the spring game, E, just so you know. They'll be running the same stuff as last year.
Yeah. Well, it'll be a disaster in the red zone for sure. No doubt about it. Hey, CJ, I think we have a cut from Sark today that we can kind of launch the conversation. Steve Sarkisian after the 10th practice this morning over at DKR. And can you fire this up, CJ, and then we'll comment.
As far as our team goes, we're having a really competitive spring practice right now. We have a really competitive practice slash scrimmage on Saturday. Physical, a lot of tackling, which we needed. And we came back again today and was really impressed with the mental intensity, the focus, the effort, the speed at practice. They brought it again today. So really encouraged by that. I'd say something that we talked a lot about to the team today was this. You know, in the past, as we were building this program, we talked a lot about culture beats talent. And we had to build a really strong culture to beat maybe teams that maybe had a little better talent than we did early on. And now we've assembled a pretty talented football team. But we still need the culture. Because as I touched on, I think at some points last year, culture and talent together, that's really dangerous. And so we don't ever want to sacrifice the team mentality just because we have the talent now. Because that we're going to need both to try to go win a championship this fall. And I think our guys have been very responsive to that. And I think it's something that as we continue to grow with this team, as we you know, get through the second half of spring practice here, as we head into the summer and working on our culture in the summer and then into training camp, that as we're building the team physically and as guys are getting better at their fundamentals, at their techniques, at understanding the scheme, we're not losing sight of the culture and how important that aspect is for us to be a championship team come the fall.
Great stuff right there, guys. I mean, there's so much there. I mean, culture is can be a slogan on a T-shirt, sign on a wall, those kind of things. But, as we know, Rod and CJ, when it's intentional and it's deliberate and it's all the time, that's why I mentioned off the top the UConn team last night that beat everybody by 20 points in this run to a second straight national title. When really good players, take the adopt the we, not me mentality and are willing to, define and find out what their role is within the team. That's kind of what Stark is saying. It's what we've seen with Don Staley's team, with Dan Hurley, with elite teams. It's it's not what can the team do for me? What can I do for the team becomes the question. And when you have that culture with really talented players, as he just said, that can be dangerous.
Yeah, it absolutely can be. I mean, even go back just a few years ago. Who was the Iowa State player that was saying it's a five-star culture over five-star players?
Oh, yeah.
Remember how much that really kind of struck a chord with Texas fans? Because I think deep down they knew it was true. And especially early on in Sarkisian's tenure when it wasn't his players and it was still kind of those remnants of guys who really hadn't seen a ton of success on the field. It was basically true. You know, for whatever the reason, Matt Campbell was able to get those guys at Iowa to buy into what they had. You know, they weren't the most talented kids, but as a result, they played for one another, they played for the scheme, and they played for the win. And as a result, they had significantly more successful seasons than their talent would have indicated coming into the season, which is certainly more impressive than I think at the time than many people expected out of Iowa State. So that, to me, was ultimately the driving factor for Sarkisian early on was, yeah, we've got to figure out this culture thing from within, and it's got to start here. And I think the issues that we saw maybe out of the portal early on when it came to Sarkisian's additions that didn't necessarily pan out was he came in knowing that there's a lack of talent at certain positions that he needed to have a surplus in to be successful. As a result, I think he went out and he got guys who might have had a little bit of a red flag here or there, but as a result of needing those guys to contribute, kind of brushed it off and said, you know what, right now we've got to have these guys on campus because of the upside potential. We'll take what red flags come. Now we can look at it and say, if there's red flags there, are you sure you want to add them? We've got this culture thing figured out. You know, guys like Jordan Whittington, Roshan Johnson, Bijan, Jalen Ford, these guys helped instill what I would call a pretty successful culture inside of DKR, and it's been carried on by guys like Kelvin Banks, David Benda, Anthony Hill, now leading the charge for the Longhorns. So when you look at it in that regard, I certainly think Sarkisian's had his run-ins with guys in the past that might not have the greatest history, but as a result of where this group is now, your culture is in a pretty good spot. So I'll be interested to see who else, if there is anybody that they go out with a red flag maybe or not, but because of how well run it's it's kind of being orchestrated inside the building. That'll be interesting for me.
Yeah, it was I'm not sure who asked the question, but later on in the media availability, Sark was asked about, you know, whether you need to implement your culture again, right? Do you need to reaffirm it with the new group and the new enrollees and the freshmen and all the transfer portal acquisitions? Or he said, or is it something because you have it already instilled in the guys who've been here and they help kind of proliferate the culture throughout the program? And he had an interesting answer, and I loved it, actually. He said, I'm paraphrasing, he said, we treat it like any other coverage or any other technique or concept. We instill it every spring. We instill it like we do, you know, we got to instill the basic coverages, the basic technique, basic fundamentals for this. We instill the basic process. That's what spring's kind of all about, right? The basic kind of fundamentals of everything. And then you start working on situational stuff and more detailed stuff. Even Sark said today they're working on things. He challenged them, hey, work on something individually. What do you think in your game, in your skill set, you need to improve on? Do that in this practice, right? Try to find one specific thing and grind on that, right? Cultivate that in this practice. So now they're getting right. Now they're starting to get into more particulars and details. But ultimately, early on, you're just installing, you know, basics and your basic coverages, your basic system, whatever it may be. And he said they treat culture like that. They install it on a basic level. And then they also get into more detail. I'm assuming they get into more detail about it, like they do everything. And I kind of like that. It feels like they're treating culture like a living, breathing organism.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It has to be nurtured, and now we got to feed it, and we got to, you know what I mean? We got to entertain it. I got a baby girl and it was 6 months old. You know, you got to stimulate her. All right. You got to talk to her. You know what I mean? You got to feed her, all this stuff. I almost feel like he treats culture like that, like a child, like a new, and it's brand new for him right now because they just got it right. And he even almost on the, I don't say arrogant, but very in a confident way, insinuated, implied, we got it. The culture is, we hit it. We everything that we strive for, we got with our culture. But he doesn't want to get complacent about it, and he doesn't want it to start to regress. He doesn't want it to start, you know, getting toxified for whatever reason by bringing in outside elements who are going to be toxic to it. He's very careful about it. So I like his approach to it. Every coach got a different approach to it. I was told by Mike Shanahan once, thinks culture is a little bit overrated. He said, don't worry about culture. Hire good people. Focus on hiring good people. You focus all your energy on hiring good people, the culture will take care of itself. Those really good people who are really good at their jobs, they will build an organic, really good culture for you. You ain't got to focus on building culture. But every coach is different. And that's, you know what I mean? I think every coach is going to approach it in a different way. And I think college and pro, you got to approach it in a different way. NIL now, transfer portal, different way to approach culture these days. Sark's doing a really good job, but he is very mindful of it, and it is top of mind for him. It was the first damn thing one of the first damn things he brought up in the media availability, unsolicited. He's like, hey, man, just so y'all know, culture over talent. That's how we started this thing, and now we're in a point where culture meets talent. And I played on a couple of those teams in my last 2 years at Texas where we won 11 games where the culture was just as good as the talent, and both were at elite levels. And, you know, we couldn't win a championship with it, but Sark knows he's close. And we were too.
Yeah. Well, I think talent kind of on par with what you were dealing with there at the back end, maybe a little more even, Rod, right now with the transfer portal ability to bring in, yeah, you know, plug holes in key places. But, you know, I do believe it is an intentional thing. And it can't just be Sark. And that's what I hear, right? It's all of his assistant coaches. It's everybody in the building. Everybody knows the message. Everybody knows the culture. And that's why the players begin to recite the message and recite the culture and protect the culture. That's when you really know you're moving towards something really powerful, because it's not just the coach or the position coaches or the coordinators hollering about it or preaching it on a day-by-day basis. The players adopt it. And so the new players who come in, whether they're portal or freshmen, they just absorb it. This is how this works and it's how it operates. That's the organic part of it, as you talk about, Rod. And it's great to hear that the Longhorns are heading that direction, because the opposite is a real problem. We've seen that before for Texas. CJ, who are the guys that Sark's, you know, really spoke about, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and some names that I might think might surprise our Tuesday night on Texas football viewers that maybe forgot that guy. Who were some of the names that Sark identified as having, you know, good workouts here in the first 10 practices?
Yeah, the one guy I was very interested in hearing about today from Sarkisian, who probably had the statement of the day for any of the Texas players mentioned, was Jalen Gilbo. And mm-hmm. basically, Sarkisian went full Sam Ehlinger at the Sugar Bowl today, saying he is back, 100% healthy. He's looking good on the field. He said he had a tremendous spring so far. That's very encouraging, because it then led on to the conversation with your defensive backs and what kind of room that look, or, you know, what kind of versatility you're able to get out of that unit when you add a Jahdae Barron to a safety room or a cornerback room, or even that star spot, which we've known him to be very successful in the past. You're looking all over the place, looking, you know, essentially very healthy, very wealthy at that spot with talent. I mean, what Jalen Gilbo is able to do by basically keeping that level of production the same or very similar to what we've seen from Jahdae Barron allows for Texas to bump Jahdae outside for a series, giving Terrence Brooks and Malik Muhammad a breather. You can move him back to safety, give one of Michael Taft, you know, Derek Williams, Andrew Makuba. It just allows for a lot of avenues for this group to really start churning along with. And I'm very encouraged by what we heard today about Jalen Gilbo, because that was a guy that showed spurts as a true freshman. He was on the field early and often, and then that knee injury kind of came up, caught him by surprise. And, you know, we've not yet seen him get back 100% to that place that we saw him 2 years ago. So that was tremendous to hear about right now. And if he can really get things going, Rod, I'm sure, you know, Blake Gideon, Terry Joseph, that back end of the Texas secondary, they're going to be very happy with what they're able to do with this unit this year.
Yeah, I mean, he would be an added bonus, right? I mean, we didn't really expect Jalen Gilbo to, you know, be an impact contributor for the Longhorns. That's why they brought in Makuba, right? So Makuba is a guy that can play safety, can play nickel, can play corner for you, play any position. You, as I've been telling you, they're going to more position flex and versatility. He talked about that. He was asked about whether Gilbo's ascent allows them to be a little bit more flexible with the way they utilize Jahdae Barron. And he said, oh, no, yeah, we're training Jahdae Barron at nickel and at corner. And even he remarked that he played safety last year. He played both. He played all three last year at one point. And he can play all three. So can Andrew Makuba. He also talked about Jalen Gilbo playing nickel and also playing corner. And I love the shout-out that he gave to Jelani McDonald. I know you're excited about that, CJ, because I know you brought up Jelani McDonald several times and saying this is a big spring for him. And he's a guy that's got a lot of versatility in his skill set. Just naturally, this guy's moved around before he came to the 40 Acres, a very versatile player. And I do think versatility is something that right now they're trying to maximize in the secondary. And I've said before, they have to do it. It's one of the ways the defense is being exposed. It's an issue of, you know, kind of conceptual integrity for PK's defense, because there are some coverage concepts that you can attack just by exposing the rigidity of the defense at times. It's so rigid. The nickel in certain instances doesn't travel. They cannot bump coverage in certain ways. You can go formation to boundary, 3-by-1 sets. So you can really start to tinker with PK's defense last year, and teams did it with some of your formational that kind of abnormalities. And I think they know teams are going to pick up on that. That's what the film is for. And just as I've told you guys, so instead of, you know, having to go into situations now and actually change the actual defensive structure, change with the actual scheme, that's a lot. You don't want to do that. Just get versatile defenders in your back seven, and then they're malleable pieces that will offer you natural solutions. It's like, well, nickel can't travel. Well, Makuba can bump down as a safety. Boom, and just play coverage. So can the guy like Derek Williams. Basically, those guys can become your nickel if they need to. Bump down nickel, and then shift Jahdae Barron back to the safety position, and that formational advantage they had with formation to boundary or 3-by-1 set no longer applies. Because they're trying to engineer a matchup advantage for themselves and put you at a matchup disadvantage. When you have those versatile defenders in the back seven, they can't really do that because those guys are not necessarily at a matchup disadvantage because they're so versatile. And that's what they're going towards. So I love what they're doing in the back seven. And I love the shout out to Malik Muhammad. I've been telling you guys, Malik Muhammad is a ball hawk. And what did Sark say? Sark said he has a knack for, he has an ability to play the football, right? He plays the football really well. He's a ball hawk.
Hey, Roddy, he had a pick today. He got his hands on one this afternoon or this morning.
That's your guy. That's your ball hawk in the secondary. He's the best one. I've been telling you guys that. And it's natural. And not everybody can do it. Not everybody's going to think that way. You got really good players. Don't mean you're a ball hawk. He is naturally one of those guys. So and the fact that he's already making plays on the ball, getting interceptions, really good. And Sark called him out first, I think, as one of the top guys in the secondary that's performing well. He should be a reason that the secondary takes a huge step to.
Yeah. All right. So Jalen Gilbo at the star position, Manny Muhammad. Who else, CJ, got the call out today that stood out to you?
Yeah, we heard a lot about the defensive line as well. I thought that was very encouraging. Sarkisian said the first guy that he's really started seeing a lot of steps in the right direction for was Aaron Bryant, who, as we know right now, with the way that defensive line is shaping up, you're going to need guys like Aaron Bryant to step up from what we saw a year ago. Obviously, he was one of those guys in the five-man rotation a year ago that really played probably anywhere from 10 to 15 snaps per game towards the end of the year when Texas started blowing teams out. He was up in that 20-25 range. But with Texas no longer having a Trill Carter, Tavondre Sweat, or Byron Murphy on roster, that's a guy right now with the way that this roster is looking. You're going to need him to be able to step into big-time roles, find ways onto the field, and make an impact. That was one guy we heard a lot about. Sadir Mitchell, Alex January, Jare Bledsoe were the three other guys that we heard from Sarkisian. And we've seen flashes, is what Sarkisian said. We've seen flashes, but similarly to what we saw from Alfred Collins earlier in his career is, you know, where's that consistency? When that consistency really starts becoming a key part of the game, that's when you know you're going to have a special player. And right now with Alfred, things are becoming much more consistent. You know what kind of athlete he is. But when it comes to the splash plays now, because he's more consistent, you're able to see him in a position to make more like that. So that's the key for Jare Bledsoe, a Sadir Mitchell, who I was very happy to hear his name called by Sarkisian today because that was a big question mark. You know, he ballooned up to 373, not necessarily where you want to be. I know he's, you know, played his whole life at that a weight similar to that. You'd like to see him get down to about 360, 355 for him to be a formidable threat this year for opposing offenses.
Yeah. So the comment there from Ryan, I believe it was, about Alex January. Of course, he's a legacy here at Texas. Brings a professional mindset. He's one of those freshmen that has rolled in here early. Alex January, a name to watch. And, you know, while we're on the position, CJ and Rod, the name Bear Alexander is back into the front of our minds. Bear Alexander, of course, I mean, how many different high schools did he go to? His recruiting process was all over the place and ended up at Georgia, transferred to USC, and now apparently back in the portal again. It seems like a position of need for Texas. Two questions for both of you guys. Is it a position of need, and is Bear Alexander someone who will be on the Longhorn radar just because of the talent? We talked about culture, how important that is to protect. Bear Alexander, a name that is back on the front page.
Yeah, it sure is. And it's kind of one of those, it's around that annual time where you hear that he's on the move, whether it be from high school or college to college. But entering what is, you know, essentially a contract year with the NFL waiting in 2025, do you take that one-year risk? Even, you know, do you just take him on board? That's the question for me. You know that there's a need there. He fits that. The interesting thing to me is, Rod, this guy played 600 snaps a year ago. That's that's a lot. That would have been the second most snaps of any player on the entire Texas roster, only behind Jalen Ford. So the kid has a lot of football under his belt. We know that he's a talented football player from his time at Georgia when he had two sacks in the national championship against Alabama. But, and I'll let you say what goes on after the but there, Rod. there's, you know, kind of that mantra around him of, is he going to be a fit? And that's kind of where I think Texas is at a crossroads at the moment. You know, he's had that, you know, bags packed. I don't think he's ever unloaded those suitcases over the last couple of seasons. That's a question mark. But again, because of how talented he is as a football player and the way that this roster is already constructed, knowing that that is a position of need, do you take that risk? Do you gamble and roll those dice with a guy like Bear Alexander, I think it'll be interesting. Right now, I've heard that Texas will probably be kicking the tires a little bit, and I expect them to be involved in this recruitment. How heavily, we'll see. But I do expect them to be involved at some point in Bear Alexander's recruitment. And again, getting a little bit of an idea of where things stand with him. I've also was told teams to look out for LSU, Colorado, maybe a return home with SMU. We know the NIL is going to be a factor in this one. That'll be interesting to me. So right now with Bear Alexander in Texas, I expect them to at least poke around, kick the tires, and we'll see how aggressively they pursue here.
Bear Alexander is a rolling stone, right? Uh-huh. That's pretty much what he is. And honestly, I don't know what his eligibility is. Like, I don't know how many years of eligibility he's got left. So I haven't kept up with that. But I'm assuming, I mean, based on how many stops he's had, Texas is going to be one of the last stops for him if he ends up at Texas. It's a position of need. And CJ, you just brought this up.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, when is the culture at Texas strong enough where they can take a calculated risk
on a player? And it feels like this would be that time, Rod.
I kind of agree with you. It is a position of need. He is a player, obviously, that, you know, we don't know why he bounces around, but he bounces around, gets anxious, whatever. But it is a position of need for the Longhorns. Is your culture strong enough where you believe it could withstand some potential turmoil of any kind, whatever it may be, if something rocks the boat, and that the locker room, because it's a player-led team, the locker room could regulate it, but also could negate it, period, whatever it may be. All right, they could put they could really put the kibosh on it before anything gets going. Do you believe that is the case? I believe it is that strong. The question is, does Sark believe it's that strong? Remember what Jeff Banks said. We look for signs. We look for signs. Signs of respect for coaches, the locker room, our culture, signs of compatibility with the culture. And he said, so if there's a really good player that they're not recruiting and they're not trying to bring in, there's usually a reason for it. And it doesn't mean that they're a bad person. It just means that they're not necessarily the right fit for Texas.
Yeah, well, I think that's interesting, guys, because, I mean, it goes back to the beginning of the conversation here on our On Texas Football Tuesday live stream here. Rod Babers, CJ Vogel, Aaron Hogan. It's it's a we, not me, right? Are you in it for we? Are you coming for the right reasons? I mean, he's a very talented player, but I think the Rolling Stone tag is right on, Rod. I mean, he's a bouncer. He's a mover. Is it the new defensive coordinator situation at USC? We don't know. But same time, you know, he does want to maximize what could be his last year in college and maximize what does that mean? If you're Sark and if you're Kenny Baker, you know, I got to think that's the question, right? Okay, we understand you're on the move again, but why? What are you looking for? We're not going to ask you to play 600 snaps here. I can guarantee you that at Texas. But what are you in this for? Is it NIL related? Is it, you know, for you, or is it for us? Because we have a chance to go play and, you know, be in the college football playoff this year, be a big factor in the SEC. And I think, as you guys just talked about it, that's the question. That's why Sark makes the big bucks in this staff, because they are going to crawl over glass to protect this culture. Same time, talent is there with the Bear Alexander. He's going to be an NFL player at some point here in the near future.
Yeah, he absolutely is. And I see the questions. Is he really an A-gap? Is he a true nose? What kind of ability in that defensive line does he bring to the Texas, or would he bring to the Texas defensive line? Well, I got the numbers right here, and they're rather impressive. Again, played 600 snaps, nice. About 200 of those, 198, he was lined up inside the A gap. So about a third of his snaps were right inside or right above the center there. Why is that interesting? Well, T'Vondre Sweat, who had 430 snaps a year ago, only lined up over the center 50 snaps, less than an eighth. right in that range of about an eighth and a ninth of their snaps over the center. Byron Murphy, on the other hand, about a little less than a quarter of his snaps were right over the A-gap. So for a guy with that many snaps under his belt, with that much time in meaningful games as well to be lined up over the center, about a third of his snaps, I think is very interesting. And it certainly, to me, fits what Texas is looking for if they go portaling at that defensive line spot. You need a guy that can kind of anchor down and be that run-stopping guy that we saw a year ago that helped make the Texas defense so special against the run. The other thing I wanted to mention here, and you hear this term in the NFL a lot, is, yeah, you have a window. You got a guy on a rookie contract. The Texans are currently in that winning window right now. You got a very talented rookie quarterback, and you have a lot of free agency money that you're spending at other places on the field to supplement what allows you to do that with that rookie quarterback and that small contract there. Right now, obviously, you're not necessarily dealing with, you know, a free agency cap or a salary cap or anything along the lines of that, but you are in a winning window. You have a third-year starting quarterback returning. You have a good offensive line. You got pieces around them. Your secondary is probably going to be the most talented it's been in years. What are you missing right now? And if that piece that you're missing is what's going to prevent you from getting over the hump and possibly play for or win a national championship, if you're Steve Sarkisian, who just admitted to being addicted to winning, why wouldn't you? You know he's going to be headed to the NFL next year. I think you roll those dice.
Well, and I would also add, Rod, to the schedule. It's favorable. I mean, you got 7 home games this year. You got Michigan on the road where they're vulnerable with a new coach and a new quarterback and a lot of new players. And, you know, the road schedule, big picture, is favorable. The home schedule with Georgia here, obviously that's the biggest game. But, you know, there's an opportunity here. And if it's a one-year situation, I think you guys have already addressed it. That becomes the conversation. You know, it's pros and cons, right? It's weigh it. I mean, he is a position of need. Does it come down to what else is available kind of thing? Or – you know, because there could be other names that we hear that come out when the portal opens on Monday that would be more appealing or even with Bear Alexander. But at the same time, to CJ's point, Rod, I mean, there is a window here in 2024 that, you know, really the sky's the limit for all the reasons CJ said.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be willing to take some calculated risks. And I think, you know, this might be one of them. I mean, you're talking about this is an obvious position of need, but it's a clear weakness for Texas. And if I am game planning to go now, it is, I think, I do believe that for Texas, the guys they have now, and he mentioned Sadir Mitchell, he talked about Alfred Collins becoming more consistent. So I'm not taking anything against them. They got Saveya there. Not taking anything against those guys. But as CJ mentioned specifically, they don't have a true nose, a true zero technique on the roster right now. They can play that zero or that one technique consistently, that they're comfortable in that role. So it would just help to have another option on your roster that can do that, because you're going to play against teams that are essentially try to run power on you. And yep, they're going to try to, you know, try to avoid the track meet that Texas wants to put you in. They're going to try to avoid, you know, the dealing with the pass rush off the edges for Texas and dealing with the really talented secondary and dealing with Anthony Hill. You know, the best thing to do with a guy like Anthony Hill, who they may move around like Michael Parsons, same thing they do against Michael Parsons, run at him, run the ball right at him. And Michigan's got the kind of personnel to do that. Georgia can do that. A team like Kentucky might be able to do that. And if you have that weakness right in the guts of the defense, right in the interior of the defense right there, the interior D-line, and they can run those power inside runs at you. And you got inexperienced linebacker play with a guy like Anthony Hill, who's a phenom, but he's still inexperienced in taking on blocks. And then you do have right now, we still don't know, kind of a question mark. I know David Bender played well in the scrimmage too, but a question mark at the other off-ball linebacker. The place to attack the Texas defense is right up the guts of the defense. Only way to do that is power run game, gap, you know, power schemes. And I think if you get a guy like, you know, Bear Alexander, at least you get yourself an insurance policy behind what you inevitably know is going to come when you face teams like Michigan and teams like Georgia. They can do it and they will do it. And if you can't stop it, they're going to do it all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you, Rod. And I wanted to even look back at PK's best defenses since he's been a defensive coordinator at the Power 5 level. When has he been his best, or what's been that staple that you can kind of look at and say, oh, yeah, I mean, duh, they cover the run very well. I wonder why. Well, it's because he's had a Vita Vea. He's had a Danny Shelton. He's had a Keandre Coburn. Oh, and he's had a Tavondre Sweat or a Byron Murphy together. Yep. in the middle of his defense to really kind of anchor or at least prevent teams from getting that downhill running attack. So if that's the one piece, and again, you don't see many guys like a Bear Alexander. You don't see guys like a Walter Nolan even. Those are very rare. You see wide receivers enter the portal all the time because there's so many of them. Those guys who are as talented as those nose tackles or guys over the interior line on the defensive side of the ball, you don't see them enter the portal very often. They're taken care of behind the scenes through NIL at the school that they're at currently for a reason. So when they do enter the portal, it's a rare thing. So I'm not sure you'll be seeing – it's one of those things. Do you take the risk because he's there now, or do you wait? And if you wait, you roll the dice of nobody entering the portal, which is another thing. If you end up empty-handed this year, then what? Then you're kind of stuck behind the eight ball anyway. So,
yeah,
I think you take the risk and you get him on campus and figure it out from there rather than not adding anybody and looking back around week eight when you're 6-2, sitting back like, oh, man, now we got to play Georgia. We already have two losses. We can't really stop the run this year. I mean, this was supposed to be it. So I think you roll those dice and you take the chance.
I think it's a great conversation. CJ and Rod, I'd start with you, CJ. What are you hearing? Because, again, the portal opens on Monday. Next time that I'll be on will be the next Tuesday live stream, next Tuesday. Portal will be open on tax day next Monday for 15 days. Safe to say this Longhorn team will have some guys into the portal. That's just – and as Rod, I hear you call it all the time, the good attrition, right? There's going to be guys that are watching their reps and seeing where they are on the depth chart here in the spring and the 15 workouts that maybe don't see a path to the football field. I think there's going to be some Longhorns into this portal. What are you hearing on that, CJ? You know, big names, guys down the depth chart. What's your read on that?
Yeah, Texas is currently at 89 scholarships on roster at the moment per my count. You have to get down to 85, which means if Texas wants to go portaling, you're going to have to make sure that that number goes from 4 to get to 85, down to 5, down to 6, down to 7 portal entries from this year's roster. I'm not sure how many people Texas wants to take out of this year's portal whenever it opens up 6 days from now. But everyone that you take, that just means another guy plus 4 has to enter the portal from the Texas roster currently. I know of a couple names on the defensive side of the ball that will be entering the portal. Right now, I wouldn't necessarily consider it anything Texas should be worried about, anything that might have impeded the on-field performance of the defense this year. It's just kind of, you know, what you would call the life cycle of being a football player, you know, especially in today's world of portaling and opportunities elsewhere. You like to stay at Texas. You would certainly love to be a part of the university, but when it comes down to it, I mean, the ultimate goal for a lot of these guys is to get on the field and go to the NFL. You can't do that if you're, you know, 3, 4, or 5 on the depth chart at the moment. So I will certainly be on the lookout for any additional names coming out of, you know, in the next week or so. But Texas, I'm expecting at least 6, up to 7, up to 8 entering the portal this upcoming week or so.
Rod, what's your read on that? I know you keep the numbers, the good attrition kind of things that, you know, guys who leave the program and go on to good programs themselves and find spots. That's a sign of a healthy, like a healthy tree or healthy plant or something, right? You're shedding players that, you know, are lower down, and same time they can still play. And I think that's, as CJ just said, the goal of every young athlete is to go have an opportunity to get on the field and be a starter.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's natural now. You know, you don't really have a big time program, an elite blue blood program, that doesn't have that natural attrition these days. You know, so, you know, kind of like I always say that, you know, you shouldn't be stalking your exes, but you should check in on them and see how they're doing. And when your exes are doing well, when, you know, she's a CEO or a CFO or of a big company, and she's got a great, beautiful family, it should make you feel good about, hey man, you know what? I know how to pick them. All right. I know how to select I got a good picker, and my criteria is really, really good. All right, I evaluate talent really, really well. You should feel good about that. The same thing when the players who leave your program go on to other places. You should keep up with them, and if they're doing well, if they're actually contributing and starting for other programs, that's damn good. That means you're churning out talent on your roster, and not only that, you're upgrading talent, but then the guys that are leaving, good for them. They're actually leaving to go to better opportunities for themselves, but you upgraded in that talent, and yet you still can have confidence in your talent evaluation, the guys you brought in, because they're still coveted by other Power Five programs or programs that are on your same level or even higher. So that's, I think it's healthy attrition. It's something that these days you can't, I mean, everybody's going to deal with it. If you're, it's a first world problem. It's like P. Diddy, more money, more problems. I'm stockpiling so much damn talent. I got to lose some because everybody can't play. And, you know, I think at one point, I don't know when it's going to happen. I mean, the O-line's been stacking a lot of talent for years. They haven't had a lot of attrition on the O-line. I imagine at one point it's got to happen because they've had so many returning starters there and for the last 2 years, and they've been stockpiling talent there. So I imagine maybe that's one of the positions you could see some attrition. I imagine maybe the back end of the wide receiver position because we're hearing so much about Ryan Wingo now. Ryan Wingo going to play. Ryan Wingo's going to play. Hey, the way that Sark's talking about him, and from what I hear, you haven't had a combination of physical tools and traits like this probably since Roy Williams was on campus, since I was on campus at the wide receiver position. And Sark's going to put him out there and try to expedite his development. I don't know how much, but he might be one of those guys. That's kind of how Jontae Cook was last year. And then some of those other guys that we have not talked about at all at the wide receiver position, they may decide, okay, they brought in a lot of transfer portal guys, so we know they're going to play. Sark don't bring in transfer portal guys really to sit. He wanted proven commodities. You know Jontae Cook's going to get them reps. DeAndre Moore's playing really really well in spring, so he's going to get reps. So anybody that's not really in the group of guys that we just mentioned, transfer portal guys, Jontae Cook, DeAndre Moore, you know, I imagine those guys may start thinking, you know what, I need to go somewhere where I know I can get some reps. Because they're also recruiting guys, too. Like I said, Ryan Wingo's coming in, Parker Livingstone, those type of players. So I think wide receiver may be one. O-line may be one. Defensively, I don't know where they've stockpiled that much talent defensively. I guess you could get some. DB always has some naturally. So maybe you could get some there at defensive back. But I think O-line and right now wide receiver is where I would guess. Some spots you would see it.
Yeah, and CJ, you know, it's when you bring – you got 25 new players coming in, right, whether they're, you know, 17 early enrollees. And then, as Rod said, a lot of those early enrollees are impressive. You're hearing about Colin Simmons. You're hearing about Ryan Wingo. You're hearing the names. So those guys are all on campus. And the, you know, seven or eight portal guys that have come in, you know, that speaks to the players who – we're hoping to take those opportunities that are now not there. And that's the natural attrition we're talking about. You're not going to name names at this point, but come Monday, I don't think some of the names are going to surprise a lot of people. I do think Rod's on the right path. I mean, it's probably, you know, third, fourth on the depth chart on the O-line. It's you know, wide receiver where they've added all the portal additions to make sure they've got the right pieces for Quinn Ewers. Defensive backfield, potentially. I think we can see where this is going to be, but it's not even a knock on the young player who is, you know, here going through spring and saying, man, I don't have a path to the field. I don't want to miss a whole nother year of my eligibility.
Yeah, and this is probably the more unfortunate part of being a head coach is you have to have uncomfortable conversations with guys who are walking out of the program. Or, Paul, to the first half of your question, will Sarkisian ask a player to transfer? I wouldn't necessarily say that, but I think he will be very upfront and honest with them about where they sit on the depth chart. Will you have a future on the field at the University of Texas? If the answer is no, Sarkisian, and I'm sure a lot of head coaches in the region of not only Texas, but certainly around the world of college football, will sit back and say, wherever you want to go, wherever you think you can play, I will be a part of that. I will help you find a new home wherever you can be happy, wherever you fit, feel like you are a fit. If you want to be close to home, if you want to go back out west, if you want to go east, whatever it is, good head coaches do that. And guys that value the relationships that they've built with their players, with their prospects, with their program, that's something that they do quite often. So while it's not certainly something that Texas will be eagerly willing to kick out guys per se, it is an open and honest conversation that Sarkisian will have, because again, you're up against numbers here. You're four guys over. If you're looking to add, you got to get up to about 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8. That has to be the number for Texas. And as a result, you kind of have to sit back and kind of bite the bullet and have some uncomfortable conversations. But to me, as someone who always looks at college football coaches, or, you know, and looks back and say, man, they must really enjoy their life. That's a conversation that maybe they certainly aren't looking forward to.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, and it's a reality. I think you said it. I mean, it's be honest with it, be open. Where do you stand on the depth chart? What's the likelihood of significant reps this year? And then, you know, kind of put it in their court to make a decision. And I think that's a healthy way. That's as much as there are issues with the transfer portal and the current state of college athletics, Rod, you know, as a player, you know, that's all you ask for is candor, clarity, where you stand. And if it's not here, it can be somewhere else. And there's a lot of good coaches out there, a lot of good programs. You know, we saw Malik Murphy leaving to go to Duke, kind of knowing the score here at Texas, and said, man, that was hard. I didn't want to do that. I love my guys, but I need to go play. But he's now at a great university, great school in the ACC, great education. That is one thing I really like about the current situation for young players, that you can, you know, if your coach is going to be honest with you, not lock you in and like it used to be, you know, force you to stay and kind of play out your eligibility, you can actually go find a spot and get on a football field.
Yep. And if you're taking care of your business, like a lot of these guys are, man, they come in with college credits already ahead of schedule academically. Man, these guys are graduating, you know, in 3.5 years. Sometimes they're graduate transfers. Best case scenario, go somewhere and just be a football player, or start working on, you know, your another degree, a master's degree or something like that. So I'm with you. I love it. And you got guys that may decide to stay. You know, you got, I'm sure David Bendis had that conversation with multiple coaches. Hey, David, you know what? You know, you're going to be second or third string. You're not our top guy, whatever it may be. And he shows like, no, I'm going to grind it out. I think I got a shot. Sometimes you got to bet on yourself in that respect as a player. And sometimes you got to, you know, realize that, you know, maybe my place here on the team is in a different role. And maybe I'm, you know, if I want to go somewhere and start, or do I want to be someone who contributes on this championship team, because being with this championship team on this journey means more to me. So I'm with you. I think it's a better system now, because they allow the players to make their own choices. And we've seen at Texas, some guys stay. Rojo decided to stay. He could have left. He's like, nah, I'm staying at Texas. I like it here. And look what Rojo did for himself, right? Kind of created his own legacy here at Texas. Ben is another guy, decided to stay. So there are a couple of guys that could have left, and, you know, they decided, no, I want to stick it out here at Texas because I think I have a shot to play, or I just like the journey that this team is on, and I like being a part of this team and this culture.
No question about it. Great debates right there. Great conversations on the On Texas Football Channel here on a Tuesday night. CJ, the scrimmage back on Saturday. Sark talked about it today for the first time. What else stood out? Rod mentioned Ryan Wingo continues to get notice. Heard that Jade Barron had a real good scrimmage. The running backs. What else stood out to you? We talked about the defensive side of the ball. What stood out from you from what Sark had to say about the offense outside of the red zone?
Yeah, I wanted to go to the running backs, because that was something that we started to hear a lot about when we started talking to recruits as well. Sarkisian mentioned two guys again today who, again, it's kind of been a recurring theme so far whenever we've heard him talk about the spring and guys standing out. Trey Wisner, Jaden Blue. Jaden Blue specifically to me was a guy that I heard often, you know, several times over the weekend. I mentioned it earlier. He had a big play in which he found the end zone after going over David Benda and Derek Williams. Not something that was in the bag of Jaden Blue last year, maybe even in high school. That's not necessarily the type of runner he was. He might have shown a little bit of spurts at times, but running between the tackles and running over people, I don't think Jaden Blue had that in his bag. He's up to 198 pounds on the roster. I think you'll see him at around 205 by the time the season gets going. So for Jaden Blue, because we know how electric he is between, or at least outside with the ball in space, with his speed and his elusiveness, dangerous player. Now that you can add some of that in between the tackles running for him, it really opens up the playbook for Sarkisian and that Texas offense, especially when you get into the pony the pony system a little bit, Rod, here. Again, or pony package, you get these guys, you know, the whole playbook just wide open. David, I wanted to answer your question real quick. DJ Campbell was at practice this morning. I was told he was a full go after leaving the scrimmage a little bit earlier with the shoulder. It to me sounded like a little bit of a stinger, if that makes sense. So nothing too serious. Getting him back in pads today, certainly a very good bit of news right there for DJ Campbell.
To what you were saying, CJ, about Jaden Blue and adding really the physicality to his game where he can run some of those inside runs, some of those power concepts for Texas, and instead of being the guy that is kind of has a reputation of just getting to the edge using his speed. I think that's important, especially for Jaden Blue down the stretch of games, because I was listening to Jay Witt. I read actually an interview, Jay Witt on the Draft Network, talking about it. And Jay Witt is such a man. He's such a fan favorite. And this is part of the reason why they asked him what his favorite play was. And Jay Witt said his favorite play actually was a run play. Like, he's a wide receiver and his favorite play was a run play. And he was blocking, actually. It's called duo, where you basically it's a double team at the point of attack. And he said duo was our favorite play. He said when we were up in games, that's basically what they used to close out the games. A lot of times it was that play. They would just pound teams into submission with that play over and over again, getting that kind of that trident bunch formation, and then just pound teams into submission with that duo play. And if you start looking at it, I think to end games, that usually would be a Cedric Baxter role because he's the power guy, right? He even said when we interviewed him on the Third and Longhorn podcast, shout out to my man Nick Shuley and Jeremy Hills and Alex Okafor and Fozzie Whitaker. Those guys are great. Derek Johnson, of course. And he said in high school, all he ran was power gap schemes. And when he came to Texas, he had to become a better zone runner, inside zone, outside zone runs. And he's still improving at that. And I think that's what they're seeing a huge step forward this offseason by Cedric Baxter, learning how to be a better zone runner. But I think if Jaden Blue wants to be in the games when Texas is trying to force their opponent to submit, right, and they're trying to milk the clock and they're trying to punish them with the running game and running that duo to close the game out, he's got to prove that he can run those power concepts, those inside runs, and run with physicality. You don't want coaches just take you out of the game and give that to Cedric Baxter every time. That's why now you do have both Cedric Baxter and Jaden Blue available in different situations. And I think that's a credit to Jaden Blue. I think he recognized, like, no, I don't want to be too situational. I want to be able to be a guy that can help and contribute even when we're trying to close out an opponent and we're trying to do it with the power run game.
Yeah. And remind folks, CJ, I think most of our viewers would know, but Jaden Blue, kind of like Quinn Ewers, right, skipped his senior year. He was a junior. But boy, as a junior, he was one of the top players in the state. Maybe the best running back in the state as a junior down in Klein. And then whatever the situation was, got crossed with the coaches, disagreements, ends up sitting out, knowing he's coming in early at Texas, early enrollee. So he's just now finding his opportunity. You're playing behind Bijan and Rojo when you get here. Got Jonathan Brooks, and here comes CJ Baxter. It's one of those wait your turn and put it on the weight that you guys were talking about. You know, learn the scheme, listen and buy into Tishard Choice and what's coming. No one doubts the talent based on what we saw when he was 16, 17 years old. You're muted, CJ.
Oh, my bad. When you go back to the rankings when he was very early in his high school career, I mean, this was a top 50 national guy on a lot of those recruiting services. That dropped, obviously, when he did not play his senior season. And it even took him a while to get acclimated to the speed of the game here. You know, even was it week one against Wyoming, whenever Texas played Wyoming, and maybe it was week three this past year, he had a fumble in the second half in which Texas was trying to kind of close out that game, really start running some clock. They put him in early late in that third quarter. He had a fumble. We didn't see him for a couple of weeks after that. It wasn't until really Jonathan Brooks ended up getting hurt that you got to see an extended version of Jaden Blue, which we know is very explosive. He's very quick. He's got that home run hitting ability that I think CJ Baxter has it. I wouldn't necessarily say that Jonathan Brooks had it, but Jaden Blue, you absolutely know that he can take any run from about 70 out and house it without any issue. That's something that I think right now he just has that different gear that Texas doesn't necessarily have a lot of. And now that he's acclimated to the game, he's had some meaningful runs and meaningful games, and certainly feels like this is the year for him to break out. I think you're going to see a very, very, very talented and polished version of Jaden Blue this year compared to what we have seen in the past with him, where we've kind of gotten those little flashes, but not necessarily the full package.
Yep. Yeah. That's a good point, guys. Good conversations right there. And Rod, you as a defender and just a football theorist and defense, when you can put a running back that maybe has a little power to him now and that speed to go with all the speed in the outside, think of, just speak to how difficult that is to defend this offense when you have that much speed on a football field.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the pony package for Sark, right? And he had that with Bijan and Rojo. You had a power back in Rojo, but you also had Bijan, who had multiplicity in his skill set. You could line him up in the slot. You could line him up out wide, run screens with him, run jet sweeps with him, you know, put him, motion him back into the backfield, split him out. And when you have that ability and you run it from power sets, which is what a pony package is, a two-back set, but a two-tailback set, you present power personnel packages, but you can pivot to play-action pass principles. And then that will give you favorable matchups because most defenses, they will counter by putting 40 personnel on the field, three linebackers or four linebackers on the field, four defensive backs, and then that means you're going to get Jaden Blue potentially matched up on a linebacker, and that's what you want all day, every day, and twice on Sunday. And you love that when you had Bijan matched up on a linebacker that way. And, you know, you can get JT Sanders matched up. So when you go those power sets, 21 personnel, 20 personnel, 12 personnel also, you can do that with. And then you can shift and motion, which Sark does a lot of, into a spread set. And then you allow Quinn Ewers to just identify the matchup advantage. Where is it? Oh, JT on linebacker. Beautiful. Oh, Jaden Blue, linebacker on you. Great. Oh, safety lined up against, Xavier Worthy, who we got in the slot at number three. And I think that's why that pony package works so well. And it has, because you have had a Jaden Blue and, you know, a Cedric Baxter. You do have the combination of different skill sets back there. And then you had it with Bijan and Rojo. And you add a Keelan Robinson, which maybe now Trey Wisner is going to be your version of Keelan Robinson. And maybe you throw in a Frankenstein monster of a fullback in a Savion Red, who can, you know, has a wide receiver background, who now is the size of Kyle Juszczyk. And you can do some fucking stuff with 21 personnel. So I don't know where they're going with it, but you keep stockpiling these damn running backs and you got to play them. And that pony package is the best personnel grouping, most effective and most explosive you had since you've been on campus. And I know Sark knows that. Sark is, he's no fool. He's got the same numbers I got. He knows that. And I think you're going to see more of it this year. There's no question.
Yeah. Forces the defense to identify itself and create mismatches. Yep. Just by trying to match up with you. And that's going to be the scary part, especially with all the speed on the outside with receiver this year and a third year starting quarterback. Guys, do we have any other super chats or questions we can get to here on the On Texas Football Channel? Roderick, when do you remember UT having speed across the board like this? That's from this deep. UT boy, good job. When do you remember it, Rod?
It had to be early to mid 2000s. I mean, that era from 01, I mean, because our 01 defense was fast too, probably 01 to 09. In 2010, that group, those defenses, Texas had some of the fastest defenses in the country. Probably 01, 02, we were really fast. 04, 05, 08, 09 was really fast defenses. So it's probably the fastest since those years. But can you match the speed with the skill? Those defenses were also really skilled. I mean, you had Derrick Johnson was fast, ran like a DB, but he was also among the most skilled defenders in the country. Ball hawk, you know, a guy that could run sideline to sideline, you know, Michael Huff, right? Michael Huff was a guy that could get you double digit tackles for loss, but also be the best coverage defender on the field. That's versatility and skill, right? That you just didn't have, I don't know if you have those kind of guys. I think you had the potential, but that's the thing. You got the speed. That's just raw materials, right? That's just them raw ability. But now we got to combine that with the skill and then the football IQ. So I think, yes, they're faster than they've been. I think they're bigger and faster than they've been on defense. CJ talks about the edges for Texas, how long and rangy they are. They just look like a different breed of athlete now at the edges. Anthony Hill's built like that. Different breed of athlete now. Xavier Fields to me, Derek Williams, different, long, rangy safeties back there that you haven't seen around. Malik Muhammad's kind of built like that too. So they got all the raw materials, the size, the wingspan, the length, and speed. But the football IQ and the skill, that's what I think they got to bring to the table next. And that's getting your hands on footballs, the football IQ to be able to diagnose situations. Sark talked about, and they were good at that last year, by the way. Third down, they were fantastic. Red zone, they were really good. They lost some of those guys, Jalen Ford. They lost Ryan Watts, is a veteran back there. Lost, obviously, Byron Murphy, Tavondre Sweat. But can this new group here on defense, can they also have the same standard, play at a high level? They're going to do it in a different way. And I can't wait to see, like, who replaces the football IQ of Jalen Ford back there? Who replaces the sheer dominance of Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat inside? He's got to do it in different ways.
Yeah. Any other questions there, CJ? Any other super chats or conversations of any kind?
No, that's the one. Hey, I did want to get this one up real quick. What's the latest on Wardell Mack and Kobe Black? Listen, these guys are getting really valuable reps right now in that third unit, going up against other third unit guys like Aaron Butler, Parker Livingstone, a number of guys that you're seeing kind of trickle in from that second and third unit, getting big time reps on the opposite field from that ones and twos group right now. We've heard a little bit about Kobe Black, kind of the jump in impression that he made with the second unit when Malik Muhammad was hurt. Wardell Mack's gotten some run at the star position as well. A versatile guy who really does a great job coming downhill and fighting through the hands of opposing wide receivers. So right now they're still in their developmental phase. These are guys that should be in high school, but thankfully and luckily for Sarkisian, you're having a number of these guys on campus at the moment, very early in their tenure, just expediting that process right now, just kind of getting their feet wet, got their first look at a scrimmage this past weekend. I'll be eager to watch them as they continue with five practices remaining, especially with the spring game coming up 11 days from now.
Nice. All right, guys, great stuff. Yeah, 11 days, you know, the 10th practice in the books as of this morning. They'll have four more actual practices, and probably another scrimmage on Saturday. And then we're looking at the spring game in 11 days. Diaper UT DBU boy. Right there, Rod. You like that?
Hey.
Diaper
DBU. UT boy, man. I appreciate that. And, hey, she goes through them, too. It's wild. I can't believe it's amazing how many damn diapers she goes through today.
They're machines, man.
I appreciate that, UT boy. It means a lot. La familia, yeah. Baby. Love
yeah.
You
they are machines. I think Bear won a state championship with UT and Hill at Denton Ryan. Is that correct?
Oh,
yeah, he did. He was there for a season. They won a state championship. That then he moved on over to Fort Worth Brewer the year after for his senior season. So he's familiar with a number of these guys on campus at the moment. Anthony Hill being and Austin Jordan being the most recent there, obviously. But hey, any of those ties, as we've seen to the in the past, Texas will certainly use to their advantage out of the portal. Jahdae Barron, Michael Taff, helping with Andrew Makuba. That's not a yeah. – I guess even look at the Duncanville guys. You know, they played with Kendrick Blackshear back in the day as well. So it's something that Texas certainly will use to their advantage if they end up pursuing, which I think they will with Bear Alexander now that he expected to be in the portal.
Do it.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's a consensus now. And that's a good point. I mean, if you know friends and people who are on your own roster who you trust, who say this is not a risk, this is worth the go, that's probably a good thing. That's when you earn some trust with your own players, that they'll police it and monitor it if you make that decision, a calculated risk at a need position. Bear Alexander back in the portal from USC. Of course, was at Georgia. But as CJ documented pretty clearly, over 600 snaps last year at a need position for the Longhorns. He's an NFL talent, so it's one to keep an eye on Monday when the portal does open, 15th for 15 days for the 30th. Guys, great stuff tonight. Outstanding. Appreciate it. I know it'll be a coffee and football conversation tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Rod will be on the horn, of course, tomorrow morning. CJ, you're all over it all day long as getting ready for the 11th practice and where we're going. It's been fun on a Tuesday night. Thank you to everybody who tuned in and viewed. And Longhorn baseball is up right now 6-1 down at Texas State. First game of two with the Bobcats. They'll play again tomorrow night over at UFC Dish Falk Field. They're leading that game right now. I've been watching that on ESPN Plus while we've been talking tonight. But, guys, appreciate it. Great stuff.
Yeah, too, good brother. Stuff, E. Thanks for hosting us.
Yeah, good job, brother.
See y'all.
All righty. Y'all have a good evening.
Welcome.